your fault. Baby, it's not mine. Our chance we're crossing the same roads all at one time. Even if you see it coming, no time to beg out gracefully. One thing I know for sure, be no doubt when you see you are. Grass make dab in the middle of it. Grass make dab in the middle. We are grass make dab.
Secret truth. Through forgiveness we awaken, transforming information and knowledge into wisdom. And now our co-hosts, Charlotte Littlefield and George Butler.
We've got a lot going on today, this week, and this is George Butler, and welcome to our program, The Secret Truth, hosted by Charlotte Littlefield Brown and George Butler. And we broadcast weekly from Austin, Texas, every Saturday night, 7 to 9 p.m. Central Standard Time. It would be Central Daylight Time now. It just changed over. So we want to welcome you to our program, and we're going to be taking some clips and making some comments. And this division that has been created purposely between the Democrats and the Republicans, primarily on the Democratic side by Hillary and her, you know, minions, is accelerating. Pelosi and them and Maxine Waters and all them do nothing. This Cortez woman is divisive. Even Obama's saying now that the progressives, meaning the extreme leftist, socialist, communist left, is beginning to alienate possibly for the 2020 election, some of the traditional Democratic segments of their support. So this is going on right now. We've got Lou Dobbs and Tom Fitton, and we're going to start off with that, and they're talking about some of these major struggles. So here we go with them right now. Thank you for being with us this evening.
President Trump and powerful establishment globalist forces are, well, in the U.S. southern border. The radical Dems, Rhino Republicans, the establishment of both parties, K Street and Wall Street, all in full-out assault against President Trump and our national sovereignty. These groups demand the president capitulate to their demands of open borders, open migration, and to preserve their status quo. Their status quo. The president saying his threats to shut down the border are paying off, and that Mexico is already paying attention.
So if we don't see people apprehended and brought back to their countries, if we see these massive caravans coming up to our country right through Mexico, coming right through Mexico like nothing, buses are even given to them. For the last 3 days, it hasn't happened since I said we're closing the border.
We're at a pivotal moment and uncertain moment, certainly, in our nation's history. And history is always made when outcomes are far from certain. We are fortunate, blessed, to have a president who was made for such times. Joining me tonight to take up the president's bold leadership in the wake of the national emergency at our southern border, Judicial Watch President Tom Fitton. Tom, good to have you with us. This is an extraordinary moment, in part because all of these forces arrayed against the president are now public and publicly battling him. They're battling against the interest of national security and indeed the interest of the nation and in favor of their own. Your thoughts?
You know, this is a remarkable time in the sense, at least the president, for the first time in a generation, we have a president who's talking sensibly about solving the border crisis. What's remarkable is, given the crisis, the existential threat that's at the border right now, the lack of action here in Washington, D.C. to deal with it other than out of the White House. And it shows you that the left, and as you point out, the establishment Republicans, don't see this as a crisis. They see it as an opportunity. They're happy to have it go on. They're happy to have the system broken to, again, allow for open borders ultimately and a mass amnesty for those here illegally. That's the goal here. So it isn't a question of what type of security we have at the border. It's a question of whether we're going to have an open border and a massive amnesty. And, you know, in my view, the president needs to take a much more aggressive tack on the border in the sense of deploying the military on the border to secure our interests there. And they can make sure commercial traffic that is legitimate continues to flow back and forth. But they will secure the border in places our civilian personnel are been unable to do. And, of course, there are other reforms that the DHS can undertake that they really are incapable of undertaking absent presidential direction. That he should be pushing them back with. Look, and the other dirty little secret is the Mexican government doesn't control large swaths of its territory. The border region with the United States is not controlled by the Mexican government. It's controlled by the drug cartels. And the president's considering this, and he should pull the trigger and label these cartels for what they are, foreign terrorist organizations, which will allow a whole host of other activity be used against them to protect our interests.
Yeah, the president has been preeminent, foremost, in bringing national attention to the opioid crisis, the tens of thousands of American deaths every year that result, and all of those drugs, the majority of methamphetamine, marijuana, cocaine, fentanyl, you name it, come across that border. All under, of course, the auspices of the major drug cartels of Mexico, which has made Mexico the murder capital of the world, for crying out loud.
Right.
And this president is the only president in my lifetime to have said directly and forthrightly that the drug cartels will be defeated in this battle.
Well, that's right. And, you know, in many ways, the border isn't even at the border with Mexico, Texas and California and Arizona and such. Our border effectively is between Mexico and Guatemala. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's where the battle is. That's where it needs to be stopped. And if
were more true, Tom, I take your point. But those people dying are in this country. Those people who are living with the violence committed by illegal immigrants are in this country.
Well, the cartels use these people from Guatemala and Honduras and elsewhere as a vehicle to get those drugs into the country. We have to stop the flows, the human trafficking operations, and the drug flows are contingent on these human trafficking operations. As our Border Patrol is shut down, dealing with hundreds of these so-called family units, elsewhere, the drugs are coming in unimpeded. We've got to deploy the military to take care of this. Our civilian personnel have been overwhelmed, and the history of our country, at least with Mexico, is that where the military ordinarily has been protecting the border. It's an outlier recently. The recent civilian control of the border is an outlier historically in our dealings with Mexico.
Yeah. In talking with White House sources today, there is no doubt that a plan for a more aggressive approach to turn the tide that they certainly recognize better than anyone that is working against the national interests and against the American people. They are building that right now.
Go ahead. And the attack is simultaneous. It's going on at the border. The establishment is allowing this to take place. And then you've got the fights here in Washington where the effort to remove and overthrow the president is being enabled and continuing out of Congress in allegiance with the Mueller operation. You know, our republic is on the brink these days,
it is,
folks.
And this president is the only president, I think this is correct, since Andrew Jackson to stand up and campaign directly against a corrupt establishment, a deep state, They are fighting back with everything they have, and it's in public view now in this battle, as I said at the outset, to determine the future of the nation. I want to turn to one of the most frustrating aspects for the Border Patrol and all responsible for border security, and that's the catch and release program. Do you have thoughts about what can be done to fix that forthwith?
Well, the Border Patrol can be enabled to consider asylum claims. That can speed it up. One of the things that's happening at the border, my understanding, is they just let people in. They process as many as possible in a day, and, of course, the system is overwhelmed. But if you know you have only so many beds or so much capacity to detain these fraudsters, then you shut down the border once you reach the daily limit. Right. If you only have room for two more people to come in through a particular border point, you shut it down. These asylum laws can be enforced, but they're not a suicide pact. Yeah. And that's why the president should direct the DHS to manage the border better. It's not happening. DHS is doing yeoman's work in many respects, but they're unimaginative in dealing with the crisis. And this is where the president needs to bring his special outlook, because frankly he's a one man show in terms of this being entrepreneurial and figuring out solutions and taking advantage of a different approach that a deep state and the establishment, even good thinking people here in Washington, can't think through.
Yeah, I want to turn. I can't have you here without talking to you about this, the New York Times resurrecting anonymous sources to bring this business about Barr misinterpreting the Mueller report. Yeah, I've given sort of my reaction to the idea of the Times' use of anonymous sources for this kind of spurious nonsense. Your thoughts about the Times reporting and whatever, if there is any substance to that you discerned in that report?
Well, Barr blew up the conspiracy of the Mueller people to smear the president through this report. They weren't expecting Barr to be effective and efficient in analyzing the report, seeing through the gamesmanship with the obstruction of justice, and getting the key details out to the American people. So they're angry about that. They were hoping the report
would
be
darlings.
Put
up. Poor
That's
darlings.
Right. And so they've got this dossier, especially related to the smears related to obstruction that they want the House Democrats to use to try to overthrow and impeach the president.
Please.
And so this is all the spin related to that.
This is appalling. It is such drivel. It is unworthy of whatever the Times once was. And the Dems have exposed them for themselves for what they are.
I
vicious, venomous, anti-Trump activists who have no other purpose apparently in their political lives. You get the last word real quickly, please.
I want Mr. Mueller. I want Mr. Weissman. I want the rest to testify. Yeah. One thing I want to know is why, once they figured out there was no Russia collusion a year ago, they let this hang over the president and hold back this report.
Because
seemingly to help the Democrats win in November.
Because, Tom, it was their purpose from the outset.
Amen.
It was, after all, as you know, a witch hunt. Tom, thanks so much. Great
You're
to
welcome.
See you. Thanks for being here.
You
Tom
too.
Fitton, Judicial Watch.
This move that Putin made into Venezuela is very, very threatening. And it should have been countered earlier by President Trump when they reached the height of the opposition down there. We should have moved in on a UN type of basis or done something with an adjoining country to ameliorate this move by Russians into the area. But I just don't know what we can do now, and it looks like it's going to be expanded. So we've got some other clips coming up later. But listen to this.
Well, joining us tonight, columnist, author, Asia expert, Gordon Chang, and I want to say that we've just received word that the president, just about 5 minutes ago, the White House announcing the president will be meeting with the vice premier. Do you suppose this augurs well for developments in the trade talks?
Well, people would say that this augurs for a trade agreement pretty soon. I don't think we should have a trade agreement with Liu, with the Chinese. And the reason is, you know, the remedy for failed trade agreements with the Chinese, and we've had decades of failed trade agreements, is not another trade agreement. The remedy is to impose costs on the Chinese so they stop doing what they shouldn't be doing, which is stealing our intellectual property and committing all of these World Trade Organization trade violations.
Do you not think it would be a disaster for the Trump administration to come up with a trade agreement that doesn't assure that there will be no more stealing $500 billion of intellectual property and technology from the United States? Don't you think it would be an absolute disaster if there isn't an absolute and immediate end to forced transfers by U.S. companies in China? It would be a disaster.
It would be a disaster for one very simple reason, Lou, and that is each year the Chinese steal hundreds of billions of dollars of U.S. intellectual property, perhaps as much as a half trillion, which means that every time we have an agreement with the Chinese, and this is the past, every time we have an agreement, they continue trade violations, they continue stealing our stuff, and we don't enforce the agreements that we've arrived at. So this is the real problem here.
You know, Secretary Nielsen, she said the other day that the immigration system, the border for which she is responsible, is in meltdown. A senior DH official referred to it as a breakdown. Another referred to it as the border is on fire. In point of fact, this hemisphere is on fire. The Chinese intervention in Central and South America. It's not the subject of much television news coverage or, for that matter, any kind of news coverage of a particular moment. We're watching them in Venezuela. We're watching them in Panama. The Russians now have security forces, about 200, we're told. The number we're uncertain of, but that's what we're getting word of in Venezuela. The Chinese have numbers approaching that of security forces, i.e. Chinese troops, there. Providing humanitarian assistance, apparently, as well as supporting their and protecting their investment. What are the implications? How seriously should this administration be responding? And frankly, why have we not responded more vigorously and publicly to the presence of the Russians and the Chinese in Venezuela?
Well, both Russia and China have turned Venezuela into the Syria of the Western Hemisphere. They're prolonging this crisis. And through military involvement and also commercial investments, they're turning our hemisphere into a contested region. And that's entirely within what Beijing and Moscow have hoped to do. Just one statistic shows what's going on. In the Caribbean, where you have a lot of small countries, China has put more investment there than in the rest of Latin America. So this is not investment that is being done for commercial purposes. This is investment for strategic purposes because it's financed by the Chinese government and it's directed by state enterprises. And so you clearly have the Chinese with a specific strategic intention in our own region.
And more than an intention, it's obvious that they're carrying out their strategy to subsume, if you will, U.S. Influence in the Caribbean. And this administration, it's the intelligence agencies. Let me ask you this on the Caribbean. Where the hell are they? We once had a significant intelligence presence in the Caribbean, Central America for that matter. It seems as though we are suddenly left blind and deaf when it comes to Chinese intervention in this hemisphere.
Well, we need to do more, but the one thing that this administration has done, and this is a really good thing, is that President Trump met with five Caribbean leaders in March.
Right.
And there is much more of an initiative. Now, we need much more
commitment. What is the initiative? What is the initiative? We have no sense of the initiative. We can cite chapter and verse about Chinese investment in this hemisphere. Where is U.S. investment? Where is more than a handshake and a talk and a photo op? it's going to take a heck of a lot more than that.
It's going to take determination and will take commitment. But the one thing that this administration has done is it, first of all, has said it's going to do this, which is important. And I think that they're actually going to put some money behind it because the Chinese, as you say, are there.
They may have to put a heck of a lot more than money behind it. They're dealing with the Chinese and the Russians who don't sit there and tell you they're going to do something. They do it. And, you know, the president, when he ran for office, said politicians talk. The rest of us act. We're going to find out exactly what this government is capable of because it's being challenged. This nation is being challenged on every quarter of this hemisphere right now. And first and most urgently, our southern border with Mexico.
You know, you have a Chinese military base in Venezuela, and it's rumored there's one in Cuba as well. And we got to remember that the Russians...
Whose base?
China.
China.
A permanent Chinese
base. We know there's
base
a Russian base.
In Venezuela.
Yes.
And probably one in Cuba as well. They're listening to our telephone conversations from Cuba.
Then shame on us for not reacting. And the previous administration bears huge responsibility. Gordon, thanks so much. It's always an uplifting catalog of concerns that we share here. Thank you so much.
This one in our own backyard.
Yes, well, front yard, backyard, you know, it looks like 360 degrees to me. Thanks so much, Gordon.
Now, coming up next is interviewed with the author Diversity Delusion, Heather McDonald, and the Manhattan Institute there in New York, and interviewed by Tucker Carlson. And it's getting to be tyrannical is what some of these extreme feminists are doing on the university campus. So here we go with her right now. So listen carefully about this. And it's great insight. Heather McDonald, author of Diversity Delusion. Here we go.
Heather McDonald is the author of The Diversity Delusion, and she joins us tonight. Heather, thanks very much for coming on.
Thank you.
So just in the past 24 hours, we've been rethinking this question. We sort of jumped headlong into the mocking of Joe Biden, which was fun, I will say. But then I heard Nancy Pelosi say what we just played her saying, which is we really ought to approach other people as if we all have colds and have a arm's-length relationship with people we're not related to. What kind of society is she describing?
An inhuman one, Tucker, one where there is no forgiveness, there is no acceptance of differences of behavior. We're all supposed to be for diversity, right? How about accepting the diversity of an older generation that has a different style of engagement, that has not been terrorized into frigid self-criticism by the feminist harpies that cannot understand that there are different human beings, there are different ways of relating to people. This is going to end normal human intercourse as we know it if they're allowed to get away with this. These females have all said there was nothing sexual about it. Okay, the conversation should end there. But the new standard now that feminists are setting is they determine by their subjective experience the character of experiences. There's no reasonable person standard. We're certainly not going to accept the male's view that, as Biden said, I had no intention to offend anybody. I was not intending anything sexual. None of that matters now. If a feminist feels offended, then the interaction is objectively offensive. And that is a recipe for chaos and alienation.
I think you're exactly right. A recipe for what we have, which is chaos and alienation, increasingly. So I think a lot of us, me, I'll speak for myself. I looked on at this and there's something amusing about watching the left eat itself.
Yes.
Because they have to adhere to their own ludicrous standards. They're living in the PC hell they created for the rest of us. But what's happening to Joe Biden is what they plan for the rest of us.
Uh-huh. And what he plans for everybody else. So when it's hard not to take a certain fiendish glee in this.
Yes.
Because it's certainly turnaround is fair play. This is a man who unleashed the war on due process in campus tribunals, who has unleashed every single feminist trope about phantom rape culture for the last three decades. He says believe survivors. So it's purely just what he's getting. Nevertheless, I urge you, Tucker, to step above pure political vendetta.
Yes.
And say, no, what's at stake here is the livability of human society. Young people have to understand old people. People have to be a little flexible. But the feminist worldview is brittle, it's intolerant, it's unforgiving, and it's utterly narcissistic. These females are saying their worldview, their subjective experience should be now the norm for everybody else, regardless of whether it is objectively reasonable what their interpretation is.
So what would you say to non-liberals? The temptation is always going to be to engage in exactly the behavior that you criticize in others. In other words, you know, they're destroying politicians. Bernie Sanders apparently or maybe leaked this against Joe Biden. So now conservatives can become every bit as aggrieved.
Yes.
And use the same style. But that is a trap, I think.
Absolutely. You have to realize that precedent and principle matters. And the precedent that you're setting will be used against you. There's always changes of power. And the ideal for human experience is to live by something that is not sheer partisan vengeance, and to set principles that you're happy to live with for yourself and for other people. So again, in this case, as tempting as Biden is as a target, and certainly, you know, he's the strongest contender against Donald Trump, but his real sin is just his own history.
That's
of
right.
Stoking the feminist furies. Again, we should not go down that path, because I can guarantee you there's going to be a whole line of Republican politicians who deserve to succeed who are going to have photos taken of them when they've got an arm around
right.
somebody, just simply because they are a physical human being. And I'll tell you the other thing that we can see where this is taking us. Antioch College, which was roundly marked in 1990 for its affirmative consent policy for drunken campus hookups, and said every last grope has to be explicitly agreed to. And everybody said, this is crazy. 2 decades later, every college has an affirmative consent.
That's exactly
now,
right.
Now, they are applying affirmative consent to platonic touch. Now a daughter objects to her mother hugging her because she didn't get consent. This is where this is going to take us, Tucker.
It really is dystopian.
It is.
The kind of sterile world
that they're imposing
on us.
Heather
McDonald, I can't think of anyone who could have explained that better than you just did. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Tucker.
We've got Tom Fenton coming up next with his weekly review. We're going to be playing part of it. He's awful good on a synopsis and summary. So here we go with Tom Fenton right now. Thank you for listening with us.
Hi, everyone. Judicial Watch President Tom Fenton here with our weekly update here on social media. Thanks for joining us. As always, a lot going on here in the swamp. Judicial Watch, of course, continues to do the heavy lifting in exposing the coup against President Trump and the abuses of power by the Obama administration to target him. So I have some updates there. We're investigating the Mueller special counsel operation and potential leaks to CNN. And on top of that, I've got some important commentary and reaction to the latest attacks on the president by Congress and the leaks targeting him out of the Mueller special counsel operation. I guess I'll start with that, because that represents the most serious. The coup began in large measure. There was always wanting an effort to overturn the president, but the coup began with the appointment of the Mueller special counsel operation. You had a discussion between Rod Rosenstein, Andrew McCabe, the then acting FBI director fired for misconduct since then, about wearing a wire on the president and invoking the 25th Amendment illicitly to overthrow him. Also part of that discussion was the corrupt appointment of Robert Mueller, who had interviewed for the FBI position, I think, the day before he was appointed. So he was inherently conflicted from investigating the very issue he was hired to do, because he had sought the job of FBI director. He was being asked to investigate how that job opening occurred. It's just incredible violations of any sense of fairness and any rule related to the conflict of interests that supposedly govern Justice Department actions. But when it comes to getting President Trump, all bets are off. So you had this then aggressive effort by the Mueller special counsel operation to harass the president. And it was all based on, in large measure, this fraudulent dossier created by the Democratic National Committee and Hillary Clinton's campaign, secretly, of course. And the dossier was known to be it was known that the dossier had no credibility. Robert Mueller, in January of 2017, admitted that it was minimally corroborated when he showed it to the president in an attempt to, in my view, intimidate him and trying to keep his job the same way J. Edgar Hoover allegedly did with various presidents. So then that didn't stop the deep state and Mr. Mueller from continuing to pursue this fraudulent piece of information to harass the president. And in large measure, it was the beginning of last year, where they indicted some Russians related to the hacking or Russia involvement in setting up fake Facebook accounts where they spent $100,000 or so to try to influence the election. So there were some indictments there, but of course there were Russians, and the indictments never went out of their way, and in terms of the public comments about that by the Justice Department, they went out of their way to say there were no Americans knowingly involved in this. So they knew a year ago there was no collusion. So despite that, they continue to harass the president, and we now finally have the Mueller report. Of course, they kept that conclusion, I guarantee you, they made away from the American people through an election cycle. So there's potential corruption there. And now they created this gargantuan report, nearly 400 pages, where they admit there was no evidence of Russia collusion with President Trump. No evidence. That means the dossier was a fraud and a fake. And on top of that, they came up with this smear job part of the report based on Barr's analysis Attorney General Barr's description of it, saying that there was no obstruction of justice or they didn't have any evidence to get them to file an obstruction of justice charge, although they said that he wasn't exonerated of obstruction of justice. Barr rightly saw through that garbage and said, no, there is no obstruction of justice and we're not filing any charges and we're not concluding there would be obstruction of justice here. So the deep state has been unhappy with the way Barr has described the Mueller report. Now, you may recall, if you watch us here repeatedly, that I have always opposed the very idea of a Mueller report. The notion that the Justice Department could write a report, especially on the president's decision-making, as to whether to hire or fire or whatever, any personnel, like the FBI director, James Comey, is just completely absurd. So the Justice Department now has the ability to comment on the president's hiring and firing practices and gets to decide whether or not it's obstruction of justice? That's ridiculous. And is it going to be applied to the Justice Department internally as well? If a prosecutor declines to file a charge or files charges and leaves others on the table, are we going to now investigate them for obstruction of justice? It doesn't make any sense. And it makes less sense, obviously, for the president, who's elected by the people of the United States to run the executive branch, to abuse the Justice Department to investigate him for firing the FBI director. So what happened this week is that the Mueller operation began leaking to the Washington Post and to the state and to the New York Times that there was more to the Mueller report than Mr. Barr had summarized, and it may make the president look bad. Well, that's no surprise. I've been warning you of that since the get-go. Now, just because there's another dossier out there, that doesn't necessarily mean that someone like Attorney General Barr wouldn't see through, as I say, the smears, and come to the conclusion, as evidently even Mr. Mueller did, there was no Russia collusion and there was nothing credible to suggest an obstruction of justice charge. So, but it shows you the coup effort against President Trump continues. And sure enough, now what goes on when you have documents like this that potentially can be publicly released, there's a process that the government goes through. It's always too slow. I don't need any lectures from anyone here in Washington, D.C., or anyone in the media about what transparency is. I've been here at Judicial Watch for 20 years. We've been doing this work for 25 years. Judicial Watch knows what transparency is. We know what the law requires. We've fought virtually every issue that's under debate right now, for grand jury material, executive privilege material, internal Justice Department documents, FBI documents, you name it. Judicial Watch has litigated it. But we do know how the process works. And the Justice Department evidently received 400 pages of material, every page of which was marked as containing potentially grand jury material. So what that means is that grand jury material cannot be released on its own by the Justice Department, meaning the Justice Department just can't decide unilaterally to release grand jury material. They need the permission of the courts. And the courts don't like to release grand jury material. Sometimes they authorize the release of grand jury material in historical cases where witnesses have passed away or the targets of the investigation have passed away. I think there was some a court ruling recently in that regard in one of the Nixon cases. But typically grand jury material never sees the light of day. And then, of course, there's executive privilege material. Remember, the Justice Department received 1 million-plus pages of documents from the White House. The White House never waived executive privilege in sending that material over there. So the president has prerogatives that the courts recognize and that everyone else in Washington recognizes for any other president, but evidently not for President Trump. Now, the president is weighed in generally, saying he wants the information to be released. Attorney General Barr said they're going to try to release as much as they can. In Judicial Watch litigation, of course, Judicial Watch, again, finding out information before anyone else as a result of our FOIA litigation, because we have been asking for certain documents that were covered by the Mueller operation that may now be released as a result of the report being issued. And the Justice Department got back to us, and they said they got to evaluate the Mueller report, and they'll figure out what to do by April 16th, which you can read to mean that they'll have finished analyzing the Mueller report by the middle of the month. What's today, the 5th? So about a week and a half from now. Now, that's not satisfactory to the Democrats. And Jerry Nadler, who's the chairman of the House Judiciary Committee for the Democrats on the Hill, abused his power to issue a subpoena for the Mueller report. Now, a subpoena is not a magic wand, which, you know, in many ways it kind of is he's not only trying to fool the media, but he's trying to fool his supporters by pretending that magically the Mueller report, at least those portions that would not be released, will automatically be released because there's a subpoena. As I said, these privileges can't be executive privilege can be waived, so maybe the administration can decide not to do the fight and that the privilege doesn't need to be upheld here or vindicated here, and they just release it in the public interest. Or they may not decide not to, and there's no good reason to suggest that the court will necessarily say that it's inappropriate to assert an executive privilege. And on grand jury material, a subpoena is not a good enough reason and will not allow the Justice Department to release a grand jury material. As I said, whether they filed the 81 subpoenas or 81 document requests, about a month or so ago to everyone in the Trump world, you know, individual recipients of those letters can say no. And like with the Mueller report, they can issue a subpoena if they need it. The Democrats, part of their harassment campaign against the president. And those subpoenas are, as I say, not magic. They're not self-enforcing. The House has to go to court to enforce the subpoena. So this is a battle, assuming the Justice Department wants to fight it, that could take months, if not years, to resolve. In fact, you know, we're asking for the Mueller report. That's what we do. We do a transparency organization. We're asking for the investigative file. We've got a broad request in. My guess is we'll probably get documents under the FOIA process as we have in the past, sooner than Congress will. But let me just say this. There should never have been a Mueller report. I guarantee you Mueller and his team of anti-Trump activists wrote a report as a other way to try to get the president removed. Hence the abuse of power in creating this obstruction of justice canard that they tried to put into the lap of AG Barr. Justice Department had no business creating or disseminating a report on the president's decision to fire James Comey or take other official acts as president. Because it's pretty clear they're criticizing the president and suggesting that his criticism of Mueller might be obstruction of justice. His firing of Comey might be obstruction of justice. All public acts by a president. To cover up what, you might ask, especially since Mueller concluded there was no underlying crime or scandal of collusion. So, in many ways, the horse is out of the barn because the report's been created. There'll be political pressure to release it. But I think the report should never have been created. The Justice Department made a mistake in allowing Mueller to keep on keeping on against the president. The report should have been just a few words. We apologize, Mr. President. There's nothing there. And we're sorry that we abused our powers to try to remove you from office. And we apologize to the taxpayers for spending, what, $30 million? Even though we knew there was nothing to be found. So the Democrats are desperate to change the conversation because they recognize that the collusion fraud they perpetrated against the American people has collapsed. So when the Mueller report says there's no obstruction or there's no collusion, what they're saying is everything the Democrats created through Hillary Clinton and the Democratic National Committee in league with the Obama administration, FBI, CIA, state, you name it, Department of Justice, was a lie. That there was no evidence of Russia collusion. So everyone who was suggesting there was either knew or should have known. Who knew or should have known? I've gone through it in the past. I'll go through it again. Barack Obama, Joe Biden, James Comey, Hillary Clinton, the Democratic National Committee, Susan Rice, Peter Strzok, Lisa Page, James Comey, Andrew McCabe, James Clapper, John Brennan, John Kerry. I'm sure there are folks I'm leaving off the list. Robert Mueller, Loretta Lynch, Hillary Clinton, of course. I may be repeating myself. So this is why they're making noise about a subpoena fight. And frankly, right now, the president's still within his rights to stop this report, this smear operation from being released, to further impair his ability to do his job. Now, every time he fires someone, he's going to be subject to a Justice Department investigation. Is that the way it's supposed to work? Shut it down. So we like the idea of transparency, but I object to the government abusing its powers to target an innocent victim like President Trump. I know the left hates it when I say that President Trump is a victim, but he really is a crime victim here. These people who illegally targeted him out of the Clinton operation and league with the FBI and DOJ have misused government resources to target someone for partisan and political reasons. I mean, if I were the Attorney General, I'd send some FBI agents to talk to President Trump to take a victim witness, to take a victim statement as part of a criminal process of investigations. So we'll see what happens there. But and on top of that, the Mueller phase of the coup is ending, but they're still pushing. They created this obstruction of justice portion of the report as a vehicle for impeachment for their allies on the Hill. So that's why they want to generate controversy around the subpoena by suggesting obstruction when there is no obstruction in terms of producing the information. They're going to get the information. And now it's announced this week also that the chairman of the House Ways and Means Committee, which is the tax writing committee, sent a letter to the IRS asking for 6 years of the president's tax returns and 6 years of numerous companies associated with the president, their tax returns and other filings. Now, the Democrats say, well, that's something they're allowed to do under the law. Well, that's in the sense that the law allows certain chairmen of the Congress to ask for tax return information, that's correct. It was a law that was passed, I think, or implemented in 1924. But it wasn't written to allow the Democrats or any political party to go on a fishing expedition against someone they don't like. This is an abuse of power. It's the most blatant abuse of power, because it's public, of our lifetime in the IRS. Now, the Obama IRS scandal, you know, that was kind of a secret abuse of power until it was exposed. Here they're just doing and break. They're violating the president's rights in plain sight. Now, the president has said he's going to fight it, supposedly. He should. As I said, the law allows Congress to get this information, but my guess is the courts may be skeptical of a political effort by the Congress to rifle through someone's IRS documents for political purposes. Now, of course, the Democrats say, well, they need it to make sure that the IRS is doing its job. It's part of their oversight duties and responsibilities. Well, I don't buy that. Again, if the president can be targeted, you can be targeted. Again, President Trump is a victim of unprecedented harassment and targeting by government agencies and now Congress. And now there's a threefer here. You've got the ridiculous subpoena, which is an abuse of power and a waste of government resources, because Congress is wasting your money in pursuing it. The Justice Department will have to waste your money in dealing with it. And the president, of course, is harassed in dealing with it as well. So, you know, we want presidents to focus on what we hire them to do, and presumably not be distracted by this type of misconduct by Congress or harassment by Congress. Then we got the IRS attack, and now you had three committee chairmen of the Democrats on the House secretly go to the president's banks or bank, Capital One Bank. I don't know if it's his only bank. I don't even know if it's his bank, but they were going on a fishing expedition. I looked at the document request. It's a one-page cover letter, 9 pages of document requests about his financial information. Another fishing expedition. That's not congressional oversight. That's a vendetta. That's an abuse of power. And like I said, I hope the president fights it. So this is a pretty serious moment in our history, in my view. And I was on Lou Dobbs this week, and we're talking about the border crisis, which is just worsening day by day. And on top of that, we've got this crisis where you have this illicit effort to overthrow the president of the United States. Our republic is under assault in unprecedented ways, in unprecedented ways. I mean, our very sovereignty is under assault at the Mexican border. And then on top of that, we've got this assault on the right to govern ourselves with this illicit targeting of the president. Do you want your president to be only able to serve as long as bureaucrats and unelected officials in the executive branch think it's okay for him to serve? working in alliance now with Democrats who evidently want to impeach him or trying to figure out a way to impeach him? Not for high crimes or misdemeanors, just because they don't like him. Your right to be self-governed, your right to self-government is being attacked as we speak. So it's Judicial Watch once again that is rising to the occasion to take on the deep state and expose the misconduct of all the operators we're talking about. And to that end, we had several lawsuits that we announced this week, all of which you're going to find very interesting. There's another train coming by. We sued this week. This is a basic lawsuit. Who the heck was behind the effort to target President Trump? How did that all come about? And when did it come about? It's all been vague. You've heard stories about this former advisor, really tangential operator in the Trump campaign, George Papadopoulos. It wasn't like, I guess he was one of many foreign policy aides and advisors who were part of the operation. And then, of course, you had Carter Page, who was targeted. All of these names were being used to kind of distract us and to pretend that those were the bases for an honest investigation of President Trump, or then-candidate Trump. And I don't buy it at all. I think they didn't like him, and they were thinking of ways to investigate him, and they created this theory, both at the FBI and working with the Clinton campaign, and a hoax that there was collusion between him and the Russians. And it was all a hoax, and I knew it was a hoax from the get-go. And they pretended that separate efforts by the Russians, which had been ongoing across the world in the sense that they interfere in elections all over the world and try to do what they can to mess things up in countries in Europe. Certainly they were doing that here in the United States. However, as being alleged by the intelligence community and the Mueller special counsel, so I'm relying on them, and they can't be trusted in many ways. But assuming all that took place, there was never any evidence that President Trump, then candidate Trump, was involved in any of that. How do I know there never was any evidence? Mueller told us so. So Judicial Watch has sued for documents and communications, documents of communications, I guess, of the Justice Department and FBI leadership between the beginning of 2016 and May of 2017, essentially when Mueller was appointed. We want communications of former Attorneys General Loretta Lynch, Sally Yates, Dana Buente. Those were the three top officials in the Obama Justice Department. Dana Buente moved into the Trump Justice Department. Jeff Sessions, obviously the former Attorney General. Sally Yates, again, Rod Rosenstein. James Comey, Andrew McCabe. All of those people, we want their communications about this alleged Russia interference. Of course, that would cover the scam they were running that was trying to entrap President Trump. They were spying on President Trump, or then-candidate Trump, it looks like, both with informants and through the FISA process. So all of this would be covered by this Freedom of Information Act request. So this is a key request to uncover the deep state efforts to create the Russiagate hoax to target President Trump. So as Congress does nothing or fights on or engages in a fake fight over the Mueller report, Judicial Watch is in federal court right now seeking core documents about this deep state coup against the president. Well, and this is just one, as I say, of over 40 federal lawsuits that get at virtually every angle of the deep state approach to taking out President Trump. You know, one of the other agencies that has gotten away with a lot of, has gotten away from, gotten by without a lot of scrutiny despite their key involvement in the effort to destroy President Trump is the State Department. Surprise, surprise. Hillary Clinton obviously ran the State Department for years under President Obama, and then you had John Kerry running the State Department. Now, it looks like the State Department was another vehicle, and Judicial Watch has proven this, for the dossier to be laundered into the Obama administration and pushed onto the FBI. You have to understand, the dossier did not only come from Steele. There were variations of the dossier that came from other places. John McCain's guy, for instance, and John McCain, the late senator, President Trump has complained about that. He's criticized for complaining that John McCain and his staffer, or his ally, were shopping around a fake dossier that made it seem like he was a traitor. And yet President Trump is criticized for criticizing John McCain for doing that. That's Washington for you. Of course, now the State Department was doing similar activity. Christopher Steele had communications with an Obama ambassador, Victoria Nuland. He was, what was her exact title? She was Assistant Secretary of State for European and Eurasian Affairs. She had approved a key meeting between an FBI official and Clinton vendor Christopher Steele. Steele had been a vendor and was providing tons of reports to the State Department. So Nuland liked him. So she had gotten the dossier and sent it along, or a portion of the dossier, and sent it along to the FBI. And she also approved a meeting with Christopher Steele and an FBI agent, Mike Gaeta. One report said, the FBI checked with Victoria Nuland's office at the State Department. Do you support this meeting? Nuland, having found Steele's reports on Ukraine to have been generally credible, gave the green light. So I guess Gaeta went abroad to meet with Steele with the approval of the State Department. So what Judicial Watch has done is we've asked for all communications between Victoria Nuland and virtually everyone involved in this deep state effort and Clinton DNC effort to target Trump with this Russia hoax. And again, it's Judicial Watch doing this basic oversight that Congress is unable to do. It generally refuses to do, but it's almost always unable to do.
We want to thank everyone for listening tonight, and that's the end of our program. And we've just got to stand up to this criminality that is the Justice Department and the FBI and all these other people, and the Democrats are hiding and obscuring and covering up everything that they can in this area. It's just unconscionable what's going on. And they're saying that, you know, the Republicans are, that Trump is still guilty of some kind of, collusion, and it's being hidden by Attorney General Barr and all this other. Well, I believe also, in my opinion, that Barr will still end up covering the deep state. I think there will be people that will get in trouble and experience some jail time. But in the end, I don't think the deep state is going to be harmed by Attorney General Barr, to tell you the truth. But anyway, we've got the Venezuelan problem. We've got the Chinese trade thing that might be making some progress. And we've just got this thing with Joe Biden. We've got this tyrannical feminism in there that in the university campuses. We've got our young people that know nothing. They don't have a clue about socialism or communism and what the evils of those systems have promulgated over the and caused many, many deaths into the millions and to the tens and hundreds of millions of people that were murdered and executed. I want to thank everybody for listening tonight, and farewell and good luck, and God bless everyone out there. Thank you for listening, and good night. Bye-bye.